While much of the research on environmental hazards and reproductive health focuses on women, more and more research shows that men also run special risks. Perhaps the most attention has been paid to men who were exposed to the defoliant Agent Orange while they were soldiers in Vietnam. Back home, many of them fathered children with birth defects such as cerebral palsy and spina bifida. But as scientists have uncovered more evidence of the havoc toxic exposure can wreak on male reproductive health, little has been said about it. Cynthia Daniels hopes to change that. She's written a new book entitled Exposing Men, The Science and Politics of Male Reproduction. Professor Daniels teaches political science at Rutgers University. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So you're a political scientist. What got you onto the subject of male reproductive health?
Well, in my previous work, I had examined female reproductive health and female reproductive politics, looking primarily at the criminal prosecution of women who had used drugs or alcohol during their pregnancy and then were criminally prosecuted for child abuse or delivering drugs to the fetus through the umbilical cord. In the course of doing that work, I came across quite a substantial body of scientific research that indicated that men's use of drugs and alcohol or men's exposure to toxic substances could also produce harm in the children that they fathered, increased rates of birth defects, increased rates of miscarriage. And so I was a little stunned by the fact that there was no public attention to this growing body of scientific evidence.
Now, you say historically the singular focus of reproductive medicine on the female reproductive system was paralleled by concurrent neglect of the male system. I'm quoting from your book here. Why do you think women get so much more attention when it comes to reproductive health?
Well, women have historically actually been the property of men. So I think we are looking at that historical vestige of the idea that we have a greater right to regulate and control the female reproductive body than the male reproductive body. And I think we still operate with this reproductive sexual division of labor where we see women as primary. It's a cultural assumption that women have the primary responsibility for producing healthy children and caring for healthy children, and that men are really much more distant. So I think that has to do with what I see as outdated cultural assumptions about men and women's different or disproportionate relationship to human reproduction.
Perhaps as many as maybe about 15 years ago, there was a lot of publicity around some research in Denmark showing that male sperm counts had dropped to, maybe half of their previous levels from samples that had been taken, I guess, back in the 1930s. What was the public response to those findings and that publicity?
Well, there were hundreds of magazine stories and newspaper stories about the sperm count drop, you know, many of them with pretty sensationalist titles like Sperm Under Siege and Sperm Wars, many of them predicting, you know, doom and the end of the earth. It became a metaphor for what many saw as a crisis of masculinity.
When these results come out, the group in Denmark, led by, I believe it was Niels Skagerbæk and others, came under tremendous attack. Why was this research group so questioned by the scientific and industrial community?
Well, if you believe the evidence, then you have to also believe that men are vulnerable to toxic harm, that men are no longer seen as the ones who are the protectors of women and children, but perhaps they may even be more vulnerable to harm than women. So it undermines certain basic cultural ideals of masculinity, which I think very many people find threatening, and that as a result, there's a great deal of both denial and panic in the public response to the evidence. I have to tell you that almost every researcher that I have interviewed in relationship to this book have themselves come under heavy attack every time they find positive associations between, for instance, male exposures to cigarette smoking, for instance, and increased birth defects. The response they get, both from the scientific community as well as from the public as large, is just, it's just not believable. And there is still this level of denial that scientists are met with when they engage in this sort of research.
So as a political scientist, Where do you think we need to make changes in this society to deal with what you identify as a really serious crisis in male reproduction?
You know, we need to start asking the right questions. We need to start asking questions about men's relationship to conception, to pregnancy, to childcare, childbearing. For instance, just the study that you had on air the other day about the association of ADHD with cigarette smoking and lead exposure. You know, I looked at that study, and there were no questions asked about paternal cigarette smoking. Now, how hard would it be in a study like that to ask the women not just about their own use of cigarettes, but about paternal cigarette smoking? We're not even asking the questions. Also, in that study also indicated that there are higher rates of ADHD for baby boys, for boy children. Why, then, are we not asking questions about whether the male body is somehow more vulnerable to harm from lead than the female body? We seem to not want to even ask those questions.
Cynthia Daniels is an associate professor of political science at Rutgers University. Her new book is called Exposing Men, The Science and Politics of Male Reproduction. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, when it's raining cats and dogs, what to do with the cats and dogs? Stay tuned to Living on Earth.